lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic of Podcast.
Jimmy boy.
T-Shaz, we're back, baby.
We are back. It was a late night at the Chavulac household last night.
What were you doing? Throwing a leg over?
There was a lot of motor racing on.
Not throwing a leg over.
I wish. It was a lot. So I got home about, I reckon about 5:30 and it was, first time in a long time I've done this. It's F3, F2, F1. Bit of bloody Tour de France cycling was in there as well.
Shout out to the Gouldings. I met their family for the first time last night. They put on F3 and F2 and all watched
amazing.
It.
Amazing. And it was
the pissing down rain.
Crazy rain. I mean, that was a big thing. It's something about that track on a Sunday. It just happens every year with this rain. So it was super exciting. We're going to get into it tonight because obviously there's some controversy with the Piastri penalty. Lots of mixed opinions and reviews today, reading and listening to different media sources, so yep. We'll give our opinion. Mine's changed probably as it does. When you first see a event or something like that, you change throughout. When you think about
you run on emotion.
You do, yeah. And that's, you got to separate that a lot of times. Yeah, so yeah. I'm learning from that.
So we got Silverstone, we got Saxon Ring preview for MotoGP.
Yep.
I want to talk a little bit about Jet Lawrence's season so far in the AMA motocross.
Even I had a little watch of 18th to first. So yeah. Even I had
beautiful.
A little watch.
Look at you guys.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. He just looked like he was men against boys at one point, wasn't it?
Yep. And then another thing to talk about as well is how Ducati was racing in that race.
I didn't know
Tony Caroli racing debuted the Ducati motocross bike in the AMA motocross championship just for that for Redbud 4th of July, probably one of the best sporting events for motorsport you could go to is Redbud 4th of July. Obviously it's like their big American.
Where is Redbud? Where?
Oh, I actually have zero idea.
Oh, okay. You think like Southern States?
It would have to be.
Drayson Silver's territory, you reckon?
Where is
While James Redbud? Is looking that up, guys, we really appreciate all the support, obviously, with YouTube and Instagram. Like and subscribe as you are doing. And we are on a Patreon, which is a new venture for us. So we do two shows a month on Patreon. One,
yep.
One review show of the month that we cover our favorite, events and biggest frauds, etc. And the other one, we pick a random topic and we talk about it for 45 minutes. So
yep.
Last month it was Cheeseburger Lorenzo, one of our crowd favorites. It was super fun. So get involved with that.
Yep. And we got another one coming up. Did you mention that? Sorry.
Yes. Well, we got our June review on we're recording that tonight, so yeah. That'll be up in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
I want to thank Moto Heaven, our partner, of
beautiful.
Course. Adrian and the boys down there.
Yeah.
I mean, they just do an amazing job. So yeah. We appreciate the support.
Best website in the business, motorheaven.com.au. Never pay full price, super fast dispatch. Ends T Shavs. For the cyclists out there, watch this space. Still, I'm going to tell you. I know you've been heckling me.
There's huge things coming down there. Isn't it? Well, huge things coming from Moorabbin, but yeah. We haven't had groundbreaking news yet. So, cycling.
Yeah. Cycling.
Okay. All right.
Push bikes. Well, what's happening there?
Watch this space. James, I mean, I'm going to start with the results.
Redbud, Illinois.
Illinois. Not from Silver's backyard, that's for sure.
All
right, so Lando Norris gets the win. We'll talk about this sort of up back in third majority of the race, and not going to say he got handed the victory because you never get handed a victory, but he got very lucky in the end. Oscar Piastri second, Nico Hülkenberg third.
The best.
So we'll talk about that in a sec. Hamilton fourth, what could have been. Verstappen fifth, what could have been. Gasly sixth, which is a great result. Stroll seventh.
Great. That was a good result, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable from him. Albon 8th, Fernando Alonso 9th, and George Russell in 10th. First of all, I mean, let's talk about this incident with
Piastri
with Piastri and
Verstappen.
So for me, it was at this time, I'm thinking, geez, it happens a lot. So they they run the pace under the safety car. And it happens at most Grand Prix, and you've seen it in the past with Verstappen himself and Hamilton do it. You go to a really slow pace before you shoot off. What was very telling about this situation is they called that safety car in pretty much on the last corner, which never happens. Normally like a half a lap left.
Going into the last chicane, yeah?
Going into the last, say the second last corner, I'd say.
Yeah.
But it normally doesn't happen. It was really late. So I see what Piastri was trying to do, but it was over the limit.
I agree. I think so. We had this conversation this morning and you didn't agree with me, funny enough, but I just thought he went on the brakes hard. It's really hard to not be biased.
Yes.
But I think he jumped on the brakes pretty hard.
Well, not to get too technical, but he was under 59 pounds of brake pressure.
Yes. Yeah.
So what that sort of, or PSI brake pressure, I should PSI. Say. What that means is, you know, he's pressing the brake pedal down fairly hard. Now, we had George Russell in Canada nearly got done for that, and it was half the amount. So yeah. He came from a speed of about 217 Ks down to 50 Ks in that short period. So the penalty was there. The argument is it was 10 seconds too far. You have to look at Verstappen running into George Russell controversially on purpose. The same penalty. Looking at the stewards today, they actually had the opportunity to either give him 5 or 10. And they chose to give him the harsher penalty.
I think that's the bigger argument. I don't think the argument is getting a penalty. I still think it's worth the penalty.
Yes.
It's just what the argument should be is, as you alluded to, where it's a 10-second penalty for Verstappen taking out George Russell and a 10-second penalty for just slamming on your brakes when you're essentially the safety car.
Oh, exactly right. And look, I understand what Piastri was trying to do. He went too far and deserved the penalty, but maybe a 5-second was probably more appropriate at that time. It would have really brought those two back together and had an amazing race, because what that actually did, it actually cost us... I mean, don't get me wrong. It was an amazing race.
Yeah.
So much happened, so many yellow flags, safety cars, everything. But just that battle for the lead in the last 10 laps cost us that.
You read my mind.
And it would have been an amazing finish to the race. It ended up being a 6.8 second difference. And with that 5-second penalty, it would have been there or thereabouts the whole time. And I truly believe if Piastri didn't make that mistake in Maggots and Becketts when he ran off the track, they would have been fighting both for the lead. But
yeah. Well, Silverstone lends itself to good racing like that. And then by the time Piastri knew he couldn't catch him, he just settled for second anyway, because he was closing in, and then it just blew out the 6 seconds lead. 6.4 second lead, whatever it is.
Yeah, it was such a good track, isn't it? Great track. And I'll get on to my listies list later, but it's just such good racing. I mean, there's a track that you can fold up the inside, then you can, you know, cut to the outside, cut to the inside, and you've got, you know, DRS zones. It's such a good track, both in the wet and the dry.
Here's a question for you. Is it the best track in the world for bikes and cars?
The combination of both.
Yeah, it's a combination. Yeah. Because normally they lend, Catalunya normally is better for bikes than it's terrible for cars.
Mm.
But Silverstone seems to just accommodate both so well.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a really, really good point, because you looked at Mugello. Mugello probably didn't work for F1s, because a lot of those corners
flat,
you know, like Casanova, Savalli, all that section was completely Arrabbiata flat.
Arrabbiata 1, Arrabbiata 2.
Une and due. So yeah, I mean, that's a great point for both cars and bikes. It probably is the best circuit in the world for that. Yeah.
Are they flat through Mugello's last corner? Formula One.
No, not flat through the last corner, but they're flat through that first chicane, the second corner, which is just crazy.
That's so wild.
Because they're already coming to a pretty low speed, so they're already sort of coming up speed.
It's steep,
so.
Isn't it? And going up that out of
so much traction.
San Bernardo.
Yeah.
You know, going back to Silverstone, obviously, what was I found really interesting with this race was how everyone jumped the gun, going to slicks way too early on multiple occasions.
It's weird. And like, the other thing is, when there's a dry line forming, you jump on the slick tire, you can't go off that line either. So even if you went back into the pack and you had to pass, you know, two or three wet runners, you have to go off line to get there. And you saw what happened. I mean, they were just flying off the road.
Everyone.
It's just so, the spray is just out of control now with these new underfloor downforce cars. You know, they're just, the spray is just insane. You can't see a thing.
It reminds me of, I don't know, is it as worse as it's ever been? Because I remember the early 2000s, it was huge.
Yeah, I think that footage of like Spa in the late 90s where you just couldn't see anything. But I think they red flag and safety car things way sooner than they used to back then.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't race in those conditions back now than they did back then. So
they were men back then. That's why, Tommy, they were men.
Well, you should see your dad messaging me last night. He's like, oh, they're pussies these days. We're talking about the 50s. He's talking about the 50s. Hilarious. But yeah, it's...
That's
an
insight right there.
I think it was just insane. It showed that with Hajar's accident where it really Antonelli really just appeared from nowhere. He was so cautious the whole race. It really showed his, first of all, an 18-year-old kid. Yeah. You know, in a factory team and the pressure that holds, you know, he really struggled the whole race. And so did Mercedes. I mean, George Russell probably jumped the gun, as you said, and brought into slicks at the end of the race. But which he shouldn't have. And they seem to do that a lot this year. They're just jumping the gun and they're trying things because their car's not as fast as it once was.
For sure. But did he jump onto slicks at the start of the race, George, both Mercedes? I'm sure they did. They both did.
They both did. Yep.
Which was
the
wrong call. And, it was easily, and Charles did.
Yep. And then George ran, he was one of the first to go on the slicks, which was ridiculous because Alonso pitted, put slicks on, and was like 5 seconds a lap slower.
Five seconds a
sector slower than the rest of the field. You even saw his time. He went to last and he was, you know, a tenth behind the runner. He must have been right out of the pits with someone. And then 1 second, 2 second, 3 second, 4 second, and they just continued to drop down. So they jumped the gun. And then, like, you know, McLaren and the commentators touched on this. You've got a 30-second lead and you're pitting your boys straight away. Like, they're not going to... These soft tire runners, they're not going to make up 30 seconds in a lap.
It was never happening.
So that was super... Yeah, pretty dangerous, but I suppose they just have to follow the leader, and it's easier said than done now, isn't it? So
unnecessary risks, basically, almost every team took. Yeah. But it made an exciting race, and you know the great thing about Silverstone, we always touch on this and these tracks, is how good is it to have a track where it's only damp in a section and then pissing down in the other section,
wet in one section and dry in the other. Was so interesting, and it just doesn't. It's in motor racing, and I'm watching it from F3 and F2 all day.
Yeah.
And the rain coming down in F2, I'm thinking it's never gonna dry, and then it dries.
Yeah.
Like it's like you just like if it's raining in the morning in Melbourne, I swear to God, like the roads just stay wet. They must not, but they just seem to stay wet all day. But I'm looking at it, I'm like it's never gonna dry. And then, you know, they put soft tires on in the first round of pit stops.
Well, the whole track is, I think, lined of drains. Like you see it in all the close-up footage.
Then
these cars act obviously like big heaters, and then the winds will take it as well. But it would have been hard work for a fan sitting in there. 500,000 of them, 500,000.
Yeah, so I don't know the official figure actually, but it's the best.
That's what that's said on the telecast.
We've seen that before, haven't we?
That's MotoGP, but that's everything's just like on the...
I didn't like, it didn't say... Exactly. Well,
it was 500,000.
So it might have been 499 or something, and they just bumped it up. But we'll see. The figures come out, hopefully. I mean, I haven't seen them. I'm sure we'll see in the next couple of days.
It's like when you're doing a sales deal. You don't say, oh, you know, we can give you 15 grand. We can only give you $14,886 for your trade-in. That's all we could do, even though you can give him 17 grand.
I'm not going to say what I did today because I did that exact thing. He might listen to the pod. So back to our first point with Oscar. What stood out for me today and what I've been thinking about all day is he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that because he had such an advantage. He was 13 seconds ahead when that safety car came out.
I know.
13 seconds. He was dominating Max. Lando was really struggling to get past Max in the end, and then he made it easy for him spinning out.
Yeah.
But he didn't need to do that. He had, you know, he had the pace. He was so fast in the wet. The McLaren had such an advantage with the race pace, both in the wet and the dry. He just didn't have to do it, and it was so unfortunate in the end. And this is going to come down to these races this year, James, where it's, you know, it's going to be so close. It's now down to, what is it? Is it 8 points difference, maybe? Nine points difference?
I think it's like 12.
12 points difference?
Maybe. It's around that. I looked at it this morning.
So it's going to come down to the wire, this, and it's going to be a classic. But this is the Grand Prix. They're going to go, geez, that one got away. I was leading most of the race. I had everyone, you know, I had
covered.
And I just really gave it away, my own stupid move. So
the thing with Lando, though, is you've got to give him credit, as he's really good at letting the race come to him. We've spoken about that with like a Pecco Bagnaia back in the day. Like he's really good at leading the race. Like, you know, he might start off slow or he might not get into the first corner quick enough, but he kind of just always holds the line and will let that race come to him. And, you know,
patience. He's patient.
He's patient. And then obviously Max spun out in front of him, but he just seemed like he would have passed him anyway because he still had the pace through to the end.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he would have got him eventually. But yeah, I mean, it would have allowed Oscar to get such a bigger lead.
Correct.
And then was just like the yellow flags was just infuriating. Yeah. Every restart, I'm like, no, just stay on the track. And then I think Bortoleto went off and then he yellowed and I think, oh, he's getting back going. And then he stops in the middle of the road. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
I think Lawson almost did the same. Was it
Lawson? Lawson did do it. He got knocked off at the start. Yeah. I think Tsunoda put his nose in front where a corner he shouldn't be at. Like, it was just a dumb move where he's desperate at the moment, though, isn't he, Tsunoda? So.
But T-Shavs, mate, we all know that you're Mr. Aprilia. You love riding. I want to know, where do you get your motorcycle gear from?
Mate, there is only one place I get all my gear from, apart from the guy down the street, and that's Motor Heaven in Moorabbin. Okay, they are a family-owned business, which we love. They always have the best prices, and if I want to get something shipped to my house, it's free delivery over $150. So for me, it's really a no-brainer.
Right, so you get all the best gear, and then is it better than going to the dumb big corporate chains?
They don't care about you. No. You know, you can't call the owner of them to ask questions.
No.
Adrian's always on my phone list, and I can always call him to
He's always calling you.
He is, definitely.
Yeah, no, I love it. So head to motorheaven.com.au where you never pay full price. They got all the big brands, super fast dispatch, ship anywhere around Australia. You can get whatever you want.
It's a no-brainer.
No-brainer. Actually, I was thinking about this morning. I was going to talk to you about this. Is with the Red Bull situation, Red Bull know that they're in a hole. Okay, so you've lost Adrian Newey. Max Verstappen's halfway out the door.
From reports, yeah.
So the pressure might really not be on Tsunoda because I think everyone's just clicked this isn't the...
They've tried everyone now. Like there's been three or four different drivers in the last few years that have tried and failed.
Yeah.
So. And Tsunoda was giving results to a certain extent in that, you know, V-carb.
Yeah.
And now he's come back and he's 15th, 16th, 16th, 17th.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of people were saying that, okay, he's going to be in a Red Bull and he's going to be consistent top sixes. Not happening.
Yeah.
But there's no one else you can put in that car.
Nah.
And now they're talking with Alpine that Colapinto is under fire and they might be putting Jack Doohan back in.
Oh, no, that's a bastard case. That's French, though.
Bro, it's a joke. That's an actual joke for a mockery of a team and the sport.
Mm, I agree.
If you sign that contract, I firmly believe that you should be at least in the seat for a year.
You know what the Europeans are like, though? They
love backstabbing. They love backstabbing.
They wear their heart on their sleeve, all emotion.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, it's not like, you know, it's probably except the Germans.
That's true. But they're so efficient.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they got history of that.
You wouldn't let your missus in a room alone of a European.
no, you wouldn't.
Certain parts.
Maybe
Swedish.
It showed today, talking about rookies, it showed today how experience is so important because, first of all, you had Piastri with that silly mistake.
Brain fade.
And then you have six retirements, six rookies.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's the shows you when the rain comes down, that's where experience is key. You got Hülkenberg in third place. You know,
mixed conditions, even worse than rain. Mixed conditions is worse.
So for me, that's the big telling point is how important experience is.
Yep, you can't buy it. You can't buy experience. No. Lance Stroll tried.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but he had a good race.
He had a really good race. I mean, he put the soft tire on when everyone was trying to keep the. And it goes back to that old notion. It's like be on the right tire at the right time because if you're on the right tire, you'll make up a pit stop. It's the fastest pit stop in the year, I believe, as well, because you missed the first two corners coming into the pit. So you only lose 9 seconds on a VRE. VRE is the you check the written off cars on big roads.
Oh my god, you were still thinking about that person.
I am. But yeah, that's a big thing I took out of it. The six rookies just did not perform at all. I mean, you looked at Antonelli, looked like an F2 driver out there. So
you got to go through that though as a rookie.
You have to. Yeah, the other one who had a real shocker was was Charles Leclerc. Yeah. He had an absolute dog of a race. He was off, like I reckon he was off probably three or four times. He passed Hamilton coming. He passed Hamilton. Hamilton came out of the pits on the soft tire. Hamilton went straight off, and you saw in the background Leclerc was off. He went off as well. Somehow got him back on, and then lucky Hamilton was gone because then he passed him. Right. Passed him pretty much when he like made a mistake, which was unreal. And then he's just flying through the gravel trap three or four times. I mean. Yeah, that was probably the worst race for Leclerc in a very long time.
But realistically, that should be a race that, talking about experience, he's been in the paddock for so long now. That should be a race where you'd be like, okay, I've got an edge over a lot of the field here.
Oh, 100%.
And it's still okay, half capable car, I guess it's still a Ferrari.
Yeah. But what I didn't get is the Ferrari just they were really good in practice. They were really good in practice. They were up there top three the whole time, and then they just can't pivot. So the rain comes down, they can't pivot. They can't go, oh, let's change this setting, let's do this, let's do that. They just go, oh, it doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't make sense. This team is just such a big team, but always just struggle when the conditions aren't perfect.
Yeah.
And if there's a strategy call that needs to be done right, they muck it up. So, yeah.
It's a really
infuriating for a Ferrari fan.
It's very infuriating for a Ferrari fan because you still want them to be up there, but you're right. Like, they can't think on the fly where it seems like even Mercedes or McLaren can to a degree.
Yeah, I agree. Now, a good news story of the year has to be Nico Hülkenberg, 239 race starts. Never thought I'd see the day. He should have won the Brazilian Grand Prix back in 2014, I think it was. He should have won that, but someone shot him up the inside or something along the lines. My memory escapes me on that one. But yeah, 239 race starts, the most amount of race starts without a podium, and he's done it. So there's a little bit of an omen there. He got sponsored during the week by Lego. Him and Lego were doing a thing, and then all the trophies were made by Lego.
That's cool.
There's a bit of a correlation there, James, that I saw today, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, super excited for him. Young family,
been
in the paddock for such a long time. Just always performs. Like, he's just so consistent.
Yeah,
and he's never had the chance in a top team. And he's just doing great things. I mean, he finished fifth a couple of races ago and now, you know, finishing third for the team. You never thought that Stake F1 team would be able to get a podium this year.
I think I'm pretty sure he's had three top tens in the past three races.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, it's amazing for a car like that. Like, it's just, like, he's just out driving that car, like, amazingly. So,
it was so good to see. Like, and obviously the conditions allow for that.
100%. But Hamilton had the tyre. Yeah. Hamilton had the pace to get to, and he just couldn't do it. Yeah. So, he probably chose the wrong tyre. Probably should have gone a medium instead of a soft. But again, it's easier said than done.
It's come a long way because I remember that Sauber, was it last year or a couple of years ago? They had that nut issue. So it was like a 25-second pit stop every time.
Like Benny Hill running around.
It's incredible to see. And I think everyone was happy with that result, really.
What did you think of the McLaren livery?
Loved it.
It's pretty cool, eh?
Did you like it?
Oh, we ran the whole weekend. So I got used to it. It was good. Yeah, nice. Like it.
So you're a person that can't just get used to it on the day.
No, I don't. I just want it for the whole weekend.
Do you think that's self-diagnosed autism? It's not getting, you know,
self-diagnosed.
So
yes.
Like, as an autistic person, they can't handle like a slight change.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
I don't like change. It's like when someone...
You're looking straight through me as well, like an autistic person.
Looking straight through me. I think it looked really good.
It did.
A bit of homage to the livery of the late 90s and early 2000s, which I really liked. And
is it the second most iconic McLaren livery? Is the chrome?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, after obviously the red and white of the 80s and 90s of Senna and Prost. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it looked great, and it was surprising. Not a lot of teams did a special livery. I think that was the only one. I think Ferrari were.
They always do a shit special livery anyway. It's like blue. Remember the blue and white HP one they do in like Miami or whatever it is? Yuck.
Terrible. Yeah. Well, they actually teased like an all black livery during the week, and they got a bit of backlash from
Black Lives Matter.
Well, I mean, I don't know the ins and the outs. I was told today by Isaac, who's a big livery man at my work, loves the liveries. And they got a lot of backlash. Like, why would you do an all black car? You know,
that'd look cool, I reckon.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. But they didn't do anything. They squashed the rumors pretty quickly as they came out. But yeah, I think they missed a beat somewhere there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny with the chrome livery. They had the chrome livery in the McLaren Formula One car forever, and they still had it with the V8s.
Yes, yeah.
What a weird thing. Vodafone just went all in on motorsport for a bit there.
It's true. It was Vodafone, wasn't it?
It was like, Vodafone,
yeah.
Like, how weird. It's just a phone company.
Yeah, I know. It's.
But you must admit now, like, sponsoring a McLaren in 2009 compared to 2025 must be a tenth of the price.
Yes. Yes.
You know. Well, who's the main sponsor now of McLaren? Google? Was that it?
Well, Chrome. Google Chrome.
Yeah.
Is their major sponsor.
How big of a company is that?
I love
that.
That's
YouTube and everything.
That's a cool spot. My favorite sponsor of the year is always the Duracell battery on the Williams. So it's actually a battery behind where the head is, and it's actually a battery. It looks so, so cool. I really like that. I love when they sort of put sponsors into the cars.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I think Google Chrome, their alloys are the symbol, which I think is cool. I think that's really, really good. Rather than just having the name on the car, have something that sort of, you know, represents it. The logo or something along the lines of that.
Well, then you could be a Repsol and sponsor something for 25 years, where then you think that's the team. Like,
yes.
That's the main team of that is just Repsol. Yeah. It's not.
That's marketing though, man. Like we've spoken about this on the pod before. It's like Glad Wrap.
Yeah.
Everyone calls it Glad Wrap. That's the name of the brand. It's Glad Wrap. Yeah. It's called Cling Film, you know? But everyone calls it Glad Wrap. It's a similar thing for a lot of things.
And they sponsor, like Repsol sponsored like the Dakar cars, the trials, the Moto 125s and 250s.
So they're they're not sponsoring a team at all this year.
In Grand Prix motorcycles.
Moto GP.
They still sponsor like the trials and all those guys, but not... They even sponsored a motocross team back in the day. Repsol something.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Just a sponsor that's been such big for the sport over so many years and it just disappeared. You know, like not even in a small way sponsoring a team. Not even a small logo or anything like that.
What about a Repsol Formula One car?
Maybe. Spain is an interesting market for F1. It was nowhere until Fernando Alonso came about.
Yeah.
Nowhere. Like, I don't think they even had a race in Spain. Like, really? They had a Jerez
back
in the day. But then, yeah, Barcelona came along when Alonso was around. And then it's grown ever since. And Barcelona was huge this year. The crowds were incredible.
The images, I think you would have put it up over the weekend when Barcelona was on, was Fernando Alonso going through the stadium section. And it had, like, the big Christ thing and Alonso, like, the big flag. Oh, God, that was so cool. Yeah. The blue and yellow.
Yeah, They've got some amazing fans, but I think motorcycle racing is definitely bigger in Spain than Formula One. I think that's the one country where it's always bikes, bikes, bikes. But
isn't that like how random is that though that they're into that? How does that make sense? Like, how does that start?
I don't know.
Is it from a war or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing. I mean, it's not. I don't see Spain as like, you know. It's funny. You think Italy, you think Vespas and scootering around it. Just must be through the young classes. It just must be like a national sport, I suppose.
Well, like
lots of tracks and lots of, you know, it's sunny all the time. So you've always got a lot of time on the track. So
less politics about it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's just amazing. It's so many young kids flowing through, isn't there? We talk about that all the time.
It's like motocross. I think it started from France, but like early days motocross was all Europeans. Like it was all through Europe. Mm. The Belgians were known for being really good, like the Scandinavians.
Yeah,
I kind of ran them out and just went out from there to the States.
I couldn't tell you one, and I'm wrong here, I reckon there will be, but I couldn't tell you one Spanish driver in the F2, F3 championship.
Victor Perez?
Mexican. Victor Martinez is actually, but it's not, I don't think he might be Spanish, but someone's going to, Jared Mazden will be correcting me, I reckon.
He'll be flipping a lid right now.
Yeah, he will be. Dummy. I got to talk about Max Verstappen for a sec.
Oh, yeah. Well, how have we not spoken about him?
So, his qualifying lap was unbelievable. It just came out of absolutely nowhere. And standard. For him to put on pole, I mean, they were nowhere on Friday. Absolutely nowhere. He's on the radio saying, crack, shit car, whatever. Da-da-da-da-da. Comes in, puts it on pole. What they did was they went for a low, low downforce setup. And it really cost them in the rain. It showed that. I mean, you don't see Max Verstappen in the rain losing it. You know, losing the rear like that. I mean, it's happened a couple of times, Brazil and Turkey, those sort of track,
in the past.
But for him, he just had the wrong car for the conditions. And obviously, a lot of the other teams went for a high downforce because of the rain that was coming on Sunday. I don't think anyone knew there was going to be that much rain, but Jesus Christ, it rained. I mean, I looked at the radar at the start of the day and I was like, oh, 40% chance of rain, 50% chance of rain, but it bucketed. So, England, man.
Bro, English summer sucks. No offense to our English.
I gave a little bit of shit for the Poms on last night, but we copped a bit of grief. I said, well, what happened to your bloody race weekend on Sunday in Australia? I remember absolutely pissed down.
Yeah.
So we know the feeling. I remember walking out in Australia and like needed gumboots on, which there was 150,000 people there on Sunday. It's a lot of people to get in and out of that chaos.
It would have been just a mud fest by the end of it.
Yeah, I was listening to the P1 podcast this morning and they did a live meet and greet or like a stage show at 10:30. Cool. It just got cancelled. Like,
oh, really?
People, like, it was lightning strikes.
Really?
Couldn't, like, no one could get there. It was just a mud pit. So they said it was just the second year in a row got cancelled because last year was exactly the same.
I can't even remember.
Yeah, but it happens in Phillip Island for us. I mean, it happened at Albert Park as well. So, yeah,
it's still less likely for Australia, but Melbourne still cops it if you just get that wrong day.
Yeah. Bad luck for Ollie Bearman as well. He looked lightning fast in qualifying, but just a dumb mistake in practice. He locked the rear going into the pit lane on a red flag and crashed.
Nice.
Which you just don't do. Like, you're not attacking the pit lane
on a red flag when he came back into the pit. So he got a 10-place grid penalty.
Yeah. He qualified. He would have qualified probably, you know, 6th or 7th. He ended up qualifying 8th plus the 10. But he's having a really good year. Mm. I mean, really, really good year. I think he's still finishing the points from memory or just outside of it. Had collided with Ocon with about 10 laps to go, but still made up a few positions from there. Had a few events. But he's someone that's sort of flown under the radar to a certain extent for us. We don't talk about him too much, but he's having a really good year.
How do you find the rookies this year? I think they're kind of finding their feet pretty bloody well.
Yeah. I mean, watching the pre-race show, Martin Brundle did 15 or 20 laps in a current Formula One car. And he just came out of that saying, I don't know how they wheel-to-wheel race. You cannot see a thing out of the car. You got a halo sitting right in front of you.
Yeah.
You got your mirrors sitting there. You got wing. You got the little eyebrows on the tires because you don't see anything. Like, and the cars are 5 meters long or 6 meters long, 2 meters wide. He just doesn't understand how they do it. Like, and you have to have that appreciation and experience it. They go like, these guys are just the craziest races ever. Like, it is the craziest time of Formula One. They're so fast. They're so grippy.
Yeah.
And you just can't see anything out of the cockpit. It's just wild.
Their whole body and how their brain's wired and how they just see everything must be just so dialed in from driving open wheelers their whole life.
Yeah.
So by the time they finally step into that Formula One car, they're probably 80% there.
Yeah. It's just such a big change. I mean, Brad Pitt drove the car as well on the same day as Martin Brundle. He got like, they did a sponsors event or whatever it was. And he just goes, he just doesn't understand how a person like us driving, you just couldn't get 50% of the limit.
Yeah.
You know,
for no way.
I know.
No
and these way. Guys are straight out of the blocks, you know, fast lap straight away. It's just, yeah. You compare to a MotoGP bike. It's just like,
they would have all the strength in like their core, their neck. Yeah. You see all those neck exercises.
Well, yeah,
do.
These guys like Brundle and your neck goes after 3 or 4 laps.
Didn't
like,
the Japanese fella who bought himself into a drive
snap
his neck?
Yamamoto. Yeah, he was going around the corner like that by the 5th lap after like last 62. I think he retired hurt. Straight back to the pavilion, mate. See you later.
Go on, git. But they are athletes. They don't look it, but they're definitely athletes.
Oh, these guys, and they come out and they take their helmet off and there's no sweat, there's no nothing. It is.
They're just trained. That whole life, their whole life have been doing that one thing. Their muscles get used to it. Their mind gets used to it. They can see everything so much quicker. Their reaction times will be so much more quicker than the average person. Like you and I.
I had a kudos to the weather radar. Very accurate.
Yeah, it was.
It was very accurate. There was one stage where it said it was going to rain in 5 minutes and it didn't. But other than that, it was perfectly accurate every time. It was like raining 10 minutes. 10 minutes came back, started raining.
Well, the thing with the Poms is they love talking about the weather.
Oh, yes.
And they love complaining about the weather. Yeah. There's a lot to complain about, but they love the weather. That's so like they got to be accurate on it.
Yeah.
But it was cool. If it's like Spa, good luck.
Good luck. I think my favorite pit walk of the year as well.
Yeah.
Like Monaco is just too hectic and the people who are there aren't real fans. Where Martin Brundle's talking to like Jeremy Clarkson.
Oh, is he there?
Jeremy Clarkson and Caleb on the grid.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
actually,
so they had both of them and then, you know, ran into some old racing guys. Nigel Mansell was there. I haven't seen Nigel Mansell on the grid for years. And, you know, the banter giving each other shit. I mean, it was so, so good to see. You're always going to get, you know, those sort of English footballers that you couldn't give two shits but everyone seemed to be there having a great time. It looked like really, really cool vibes, you know?
Is that is Silverstone the fan's fan kind of race?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest race of it's the biggest race of the year now.
Yeah.
And I think it's the real, they're so knowledgeable, the English fans as well. Like when something happens on the, you know, if Hülkenberg is sneaking a podium, they're all going, oh, like they can see it happening. Where in some countries, like they're there and they're cheering for their one driver, but they're not that like they don't have like that root of knowledge like the English do. And I think Australia fans they're very on the mark as well. Like you can see things happening and you can hear the crowd getting excited about things. You go, oh, I didn't realize you know what that what that meant, or you know. Going back to that, it was very interesting. They were sitting, the P1 boys were sitting at the hangar straight when the incident happened between Piastri and Verstappen. Everyone in the crowd thought Verstappen passed Piastri under the safety car
because
they hate him there. Like he's hated in England. Like Verstappen is hated. So everyone's going, yeah, penalty, penalty. And then Oscar gets a penalty.
Yeah.
And apparently it was like it was very, everyone was in disarray. They couldn't believe, like, what the hell happened?
Well, it's
like,
so hard to follow if you don't have, like, a something, like, listening to it or whatever. But the thing with the Poms is they're, you know, so many teams are already just in that area.
I mean, look at the maps. You got Mercedes-Benz in Brackley, which is, like, a 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
You got Aston Martin, which is on the track, just to the left.
Why are they all in England?
Oh, I think it's just, it's a central hub, isn't it? Like,
I guess so.
I suppose it's, I mean,
like
a lot
Mercedes,
of
Mercedes, you'd think they'd be in Germany. Like, obviously, they'd have a German.
Yeah, a lot of their freight and stuff would be moved around in a similar way, I think, and it might be easier for them all to be in a similar area. So, you know, you got Red Bulls close there as well. So,
would you say a lot of their teams are made up of a lot of Poms?
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
it's pretty like Pommy run sport where GP is Spanish.
Yeah, I think
Italian.
The only teams, obviously, you got VCARB is based in Italy. So that's probably the one big outlier because it's a Red Bull team, but it's based in Italy.
Yeah, obviously got Ferrari.
And then Ferrari's in Italy. And then, the majority of them are, in England. So,
what about Haas?
Yeah, I think Haas, I'm not 100% sure. They'll definitely be operating out of Europe somewhere. They wouldn't be from America.
Nah.
And Cadillac would be the same. That's the next new thing.
What's going on with Cadillac?
Well, who knows? I mean, Bottas has put out a video of him sitting in a Cadillac going, this is a nice seat. You know, there's rumors about Ricciardo, but I think Ricciardo's...
I think he turned it down.
Pretty much. I think you're right on that. And yeah, it's exciting. It's the only thing is they're going to seem to be back markers at the start of the year. So
you reckon?
Yeah.
What's making you say that?
Oh, I just think it's going to be a new formula generation, but to start, you know, they're starting from ground up, you know, they're starting from scratch.
Can you buy any...
Oh, the engine. Yeah, you can buy an engine, but that's it. The only other thing that their cars... have the car is the rain light at the back and the tires. It's the only two things.
That is cool about that.
What's the most amazing thing? You got the top six at Silverstone this weekend. They were 2/10 in qualifying from each other. So that's what is the most amazing thing about Formula One, how they are so close. And you got, you know, a 5-meter long car and, you know, they're all the same speed. So.
It's just a difference though in race pace. Everyone gets found out. From McLaren.
McLaren's the outlier this year. They are so far ahead of everyone else.
But even just in history, maybe for the past 15, 20 years, where, even they might be closer, you might get someone who nabs pole, has a really good lap.
Yeah.
They can find a limit a bit easier.
Yep.
But just over race pace, it just always seems like there's one or two teams that will just 40 laps into a race or 60% of the race, they just, you know, will just have a stint that will just beat everyone.
Yeah, it's usually got to
conserve tires.
That's the thing. That's the big thing. The teams can go. We can go this fast and use X amount of tire wear, or we can go this fast and use. And then the better teams use the less tire wear.
Yeah,
and that's the thing.
Like longevity. It's all about longevity for a race, isn't it?
But it's like, I mean, you look at Quartararo in MotoGP. I mean, he's got 3 of the last 4 poles and just died at the start, like just going straight backwards. What does that show you? Does it show you the talent of the human being, or does it tell you that the bike is just good at that one lap pace? It's got to be a combination of both in motorcycle racing.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a combination of both. I think it's still more down to the driver or rider in either sport for qualifying. Like I really do. Like Verstappen and that Red Bull definitely don't have the best car, yet he puts it on pole how many times?
Yeah,
because he can just find a limit. That's the exact same thing with Quartararo, where, you know, you look at Valentino Rossi back in the day. That guy wasn't the best qualifier. Oh, he was still very good, but he always just found that race pace.
Well, Bagnaia, to a certain extent, was the same, wasn't
he? Yeah. He was always slow into a weekend. Same with Jorge Lorenzo. So it is... It's... The qualifying, I always find you'll see more of that just pure talent come out. The fearlessness or just pure speed. Whether that's driving or riding, where for the actual race pace, it's a combination of the bike, it's a combination of the team, it's the tires and how it all works.
Mm.
It's a whole different format, obviously.
100%. All said.
What else have we got?
That's it for F1 today and this week. Unless you got anything else, Jimmy boy.
Are we up to Listy's lists?
Listy's list. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen.
This is a big one.
James and I have this argument most weeks, and I want to talk about my top 5 racing circuits in the world.
Racing circuits, so for any category, anything?
Yeah, a combination of both, probably V8 supercars, MotoGP, Formula One, those sort of things. I'm not talking about what's the where the motocross go on the weekend?
Red Bud, Black Rock.
Not Black Rock.
Not talking so about asphalt like Grand Prix circuits.
Yeah, asphalt Grand Prix circuits.
Not so Red Bud.
I will start. I'll start fist to first this time, Junior Boy, because I know you got angry at me last time.
Yeah, that was annoying. You got to leave him in suspense.
So I couldn't split him, and I probably should have done a top six, but I couldn't split him. So equal fifth for me is Suzuka in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Known for a MotoGP circuit back in the day. Obviously, more famously now for a moto for a Formula One. So opened in 1962, Jimmy Boy, yeah. Suzuka, as a Honda test track, still owned by Honda to this day. The S's for me is probably the most amazing stretch of, you know, track in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that direction change. I remember seeing a Red Bull in 2010 to 2013. You know, Sebastian Vettel, just unbelievable. It is a great, great track. Figure eight, so it's very rare to have that.
Yeah.
130R at the end of the track's an unbelievable cool corner. We saw incidents over the years, not incidents, but, you know, racing over the years with your, you know, with your Alonso's and Schumacher. And then obviously that famous Prost and Senna incident to the last corner. So one of our favorites.
Just to add on that, a great thing about circuits is natural landscapes for like fans to watch from, like a hill, and Suzuka's full of that
and grass.
Yeah, true.
I mean, this
sets
year,
on fire.
This year we had some issues with the grass, but unlike having green grass for me is just a beautiful thing to see on a race circuit. Not, I don't want to see any of that AstroTurf.
Yeah,
you know, I just green grass. I love seeing it. So, equal fifth. I couldn't leave it out, Jimmy Boy. It's Phillip Island.
Well, fifth, Phillip Island.
Phillip Island, equal fifth. Yeah, so. An unbelievable track for MotoGP. Probably one of the riders' favorite. We always say that over the years. Yeah. I'm going to say quite a simple track. Probably the simplest track out of all the my top six, I'm going to say. We've been going down there. I've been going down there since I was seriously one day old. So for me, Phillip Island is a majestic place. And we've been going down there for the last 10 to 15 years. Little kids, you know, walking into that. That Friday morning, you hear those Moto3 bikes. It used to be two strokes, now it's four strokes going around that track. Oh, I mean, just take me there.
The greatest.
Take me there.
The greatest.
So, our weekend down at Phillip Island's evolved over the years, and it was sitting on a camp chair, and now it's in the back of the paddock finding out all the latest goss and
running around,
talking to the bros. But yeah, it's still the most amazing place. Facilities-wise, terrible.
Yeah.
But would you change it? No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't change it.
I'd put up DJ somewhere and put some nice 100%. Music. That's 100%. Probably what I would do.
The great thing about Phillip Island, though, is they always say it's a track that takes heaps of balls for riders. And another awesome thing about Phillip Island is you're actually so close to the action as a spectator.
Yes.
Turn one, you can almost put your hand out and touch someone.
They're trying to put these catch fences up.
Yeah.
Still hasn't happened at turn one, which it is going to happen soon from all reports. But it is amazing. And it is...
It's still old school.
Concrete, you know, a concrete barrier to split the fans from the track. I mean, that's all you have. You can, you know, it is incredible. And then, you know, Stoner Corner. I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, made famous by Casey Stoner.
Turn 12, Melandri.
Turn 12, the hottest a rear tire will get through the whole year in the MotoGP season.
Yeah.
James, sure, you know about that.
And the backdrop of the ocean going over.
That's just,
isn't that scenic?
That's so scenic. And MG, you know, Lukey Heights, I mean, just classic name. So
I'll be cutting laps around there this weekend in a go-kart.
All right, so fourth on my list, Circuit de la Sarthe.
Wow, I wouldn't have thought that.
It is, I mean, it's, as I said, all circuits. We've got to talk all circuits. It's
this is your list, mate.
It's, again, it's a mixture of a traditional circuit that they use in the MotoGP. The Le Mans track, they call it, the Le Mans circuit. The Bugatti circuit, I should say. But this is the world famous, you know, 14-kilometer Circuit de la Sarthe. It used to be a long, long straight, and they've split into three now with these little chicanes, which probably makes the racing a little bit more exciting. But back in the day, it would have been just amazing, you know, would it be 3 or 4 minutes just flat down that straight?
Wild.
I don't know, it's wild. And then obviously, you go through that back section, you've got the Porsche curve, Indianapolis, the S's, and then, you come onto that front straight, and you got those two tight chicanes into the front straight, and then that beautiful long right-hand at the start. It's a beautiful track. 24-hour Le Mans, obviously, is the most famous event that goes on there. And it's something that I love. We love watching every year. Yeah. So we'll long live in the memory, the Circuit de la Sarthe.
Is it used any other time other than No. Le Mans 24 Hours.
So, James, I'll tell you something super funny. We're talking to David Cullen in a podcast and he's talking about the 24 Hour Le Mans. And I'm thinking, oh, should I ask him like how crazy the straight was? You know, the straight was in the middle of the night. And I always asked it. And I think, you dickhead, it's not in the... It's, they just used the Bugatti circuit. Imagine a fool I would have made of myself. I would have told you I would never would have lived that down. I would never have lived that down.
I remember you saying
oh,
that.
Oh, God, I was so close to asking it. God, that would have been
I wonder what held you back. Did you just have a realization?
Realization. A light bulb moment, they call it. All right, so third... on the list, or third? That was fourth, now it's third. Yep. Bathurst, Mount Panorama.
Oh, I never thought of that, of course.
Yeah, it's, again, for us as Aussies and growing up and watching the V8 supercars, again, it's just one of the premier events of the year.
Yep.
For us, V8 supercars is a really, realistically, it's a one race event for us these days. Yeah. I mean, we're not avid watchers. There's different podcasts for that. So
it's our local like Aussie touring cars.
Touring cars, yeah. It used to be like Holden versus Ford. And, you know, your dad used to drive either a Commodore or a Falcon and it really pulled on the heartstrings. But nowadays, it's just a different world. Yeah. So, and I think the downfall of V8s is the accessibility of both Formula One and MotoGP now. You can watch it easily online. So anyway, we'll get on that to another time. But yeah, famous for obviously the Chase, Skyline, the Dipper.
Yeah.
I mean, just classic. The Great.
Yeah.
Classic, you know, corner names. And personally, never been. James, you've been a couple of times to...
You will never understand how steep it is until you're actually there. Bathurst, it is disgustingly steep.
Yeah, it's something that I would love to have to experience one day. It's obviously known for the Bathurst 1000, but really popular now, the GT3 12-hour. Yep. I mean, that's just a huge event. And I reckon maybe we'll surpass the big race one in one day. I think that
I agree.
What they do there in that event is just incredible. So.
And it's very, very well known. Like I know it is, even our American listeners normally tune into to the Bathurst 1000, but like Valentino Rossi races there as well. Like it's
in the GT3.
In the GT3 class. Like it is a huge event and everyone knows. Remember that famous footage of Darryl Waltrip? Have you seen that? I've got the NASCAR legend going down.
Oh my God.
Going down the corkscrew. Going down the corkscrew. But it is a wild track, you know, and, you know, made famous by Peter Brock and all those drivers back then.
Yes.
But the racing was just always, it's one of those tracks like Spa. If you don't know Bathurst, it could be raining on the top of the mountain and it could be bone dry on the bottom.
And like, and everyone listening to Australia will know this, but like you had Bathurst parties back in the day. You used to go over to people's houses and just drink all day, have the barbecue on, have the Bathurst in the background. It was like that. It was just classic moments in history. Like, you know, there was a stage where like the Nissan Skylines came into it and were dominating, and then everyone was booing them because
you're a pack of assholes.
Because it's, you know, that was it was so, you know, it's so, you know, in our blood, this Holden versus Ford.
It was just very raw.
The new generation coming through now, it's just not a thing. Like they probably prefer the Skyline now. So
probably.
So that was third. Second,
that's a good one. Number three, bro. Well done.
My second favorite track in the world, and now. Could be biased, but it's Silverstone.
Wow. Fuck, I would never have thought this.
Silverstone is just the best circuit. And you touched on it earlier in the podcast. We've got a track that is so good for F1, so good for MotoGP, wide, so many passing opportunities. Like looking at turn one, you cover the inside of turn one, then you run wide, then you got to take the tight turn two. The person behind you takes a wider line, then you got the straight, and then a quick left-hander, then you got DRS. I mean, it's such good racing. So, love the circuit. Always love the circuit. I think it's really developed a bit of a... in the last probably 5 years, it's got better and better with MotoGP.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think at the start, it was sort of, you know... They obviously had the two different front straights. The MotoGP were using the old front straight, and then I think it's all gone back to the... All the one now. So, yeah, it's, you know, Copse, Maggots and Beckett's, Chapel, just huge racing heritage there, isn't there?
Huge racing heritage. It's, and yeah, obviously they've got two, it's huge. It's got two pits through there as well. Like
birthplace to Formula One.
There you go.
First Formula One race was there, 1950.
I didn't know that.
The Queen or the King was there. Amazing moment in history of time. So.
I reckon that was a Queen, Queen Elizabeth.
Yes, it would have been.
That's interesting. But yeah, Silverstone, really good one. And I would actually say for a very, very long time, until this day, underrated.
Yeah, definitely. It's just got, every corner has just got something unique about it.
And you know what it is? Every corner is a passing opportunity.
Yeah.
Bikes and cars.
It is. You're right.
Just about.
And then the number one.
I know what this one is.
Has to be.
Yeah.
Spa-Francorchamps.
Yeah.
It's just the most amazing circuit in the world. I mean, not only have you got, obviously, the Eau Rouge Radeon Complex turn two, but, you know, you've got the Kimmel Straight. You've got some beautiful S's. You've got that fast left-hander at the bottom of the circuit. The fast sort of left-hander, the second last corner. It's just the ultimate driver's track.
Yep.
You know, the ultimate driver's track.
You got weather elements to it as well.
Iconic elevation changes. Yeah. I mean, high-speed corners, as we touched on. Unpredictable weather, James. Yep. Unpredictable weather. As I said, it's the ultimate driver's track. Known, obviously, for Formula One. You got the World Endurance Championship goes there as well. The 24-hour Spa. You've got the GT World Challenge. And the most amazing thing about Spa is it used to be a long, very long 15-kilometer circuit, you know. So it used to come up the Eau Rouge Radeon section and then just continue for a very long time, then come back and then sort of finish in that, you know, bus stop chicane, it used to be called. But they've created this circuit in the middle of the track that's still amazing, still has a lot of heritage, still everyone loves, and they haven't butchered it. So some would say, like, for example, Hockenheim, they did the same thing, but it just doesn't have the same zing, you know, as what Spa has. So that's my top five.
I love it. Yeah, famously, I remember Spa is when Kimi Raikkonen went through the smoke and just didn't lift.
Yes.
That just over Eau Rouge, obviously, what it was. And that was amazing, amazing footage. Nürburgring didn't make it.
Nürburgring didn't make it. No. No, the Nordschleife is amazing circuit, but it probably was a close sixth or seventh for me. I mean, it is an amazing circuit. But for me, I didn't grow up watching it. I don't watch the 24-hour of Nürburgring. It's not something that is on my radar to a certain extent. Did I miss any honorable mentions, do you think? Mugello, maybe?
I'd probably say Mugello for a motorcycle fan. But like the rest of them, you kind of nailed. I'm sure there's going to be more that I'm like, oh, you missed that. But I like Bathurst. I think that was a good one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Coda is a cool track, but doesn't have the history yet.
That's not top five.
No. No.
Not guitar. Not Chang International Circuit, Thailand.
Oh, it's got a place in our hearts, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's Sepang. I mean, Sepang's a great circuit.
Sepang's
as well.
An underrated
that could
circuit.
Be up. That could be up top 10. And I missed that on the Formula One calendar. It's a crazy
That'd be a good track. One on an F1 calendar against Sepang.
Yeah, it should. They should do it. I mean, yeah. We're gonna be there in October, so we can spend some money, get their tax money up, you know, get the F1 back.
Yeah, 100%. I love it, mate.
Yeah, that was fun. That was really fun.
Really good. Yeah. Interesting. You surprised me, which I like. I've been waiting for that for 2 weeks, T-Shavs.
Yeah, I sort of kept that one in the,
in the back pocket.
In the back pocket, they call that. So talk to me about, you've been motocross thing. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, I'm always on motocross. But Jet Lawrence, I watched Red Bud over the weekends. I've been watching it.
Black Rock.
Black Rock. Red Bud, 4th of July. I've been watching it and just keeping tabs on motocross. And just what Jet Lawrence is doing, we've spoken about this in the past, but what he's won every single race again, bar one. He got third in High Point. But to come from 18th to first and then win by 10 seconds, and he's racing Jorge Prado, who's on a new bike, understand that, a new country, who's a multiple MXGP world champion, so the European world side of it. Just passes everyone again, passes his brother, and makes it look so easy while crashing. Is just my question is how far can this guy go? And is he? And I put out this post. He has to be Australia's biggest sporting star athlete. Should be alongside Piastri, because he's actually got more trophies to his name and championships to his name, and he's already a future Hall of Famer, and he's 21 years old.
I don't know if you saw the Sunrise interview with him.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
And they sort of held up their head high, because that was could have been a train wreck. Those two interviewers didn't know nothing about who they were.
It's a joke.
Did nothing about who they were. So for them, I love how the fact they come back to Australia and they do their, you know,
Oz SX.
Like, that's a good thing, because it is a crazy scenario where they're just not, they're not a household name, that's for sure.
And, you know, look, it's...
Everyone in the industry knows, but, you know, like, the people walking their dog down the street will know who Oscar Piastri is.
Yeah. It's just...
And he's not winning every race.
That's
you know?
Right. He's not even a champion. Yeah. But, like, I guess motocross is always going to be a harder push, but the two, Hunter and Jet, deserve so much love in this country because they are literally dominating on the World Series, won the Motocross of Nations last year, and Jet is again just destroying everyone fully fit. Like, it's amazing. Mm. It's actually amazing for an Australian athlete. And just for a motocross fan, you are watching one of the greatest to ever do it. Mm. And he's like 21 years old, man.
Mm.
And he's just unstoppable. The only person who's going to stop him is stop himself. Like, he injured himself in Supercross and motocross this year and last year. So it's just... so much credit goes out to that.
You've
family.
Lost words to describe how good he is.
I know, but like, how much more can we?
There's
talk
only
about?
So much. There's only so much in the vocabulary you can say. I mean, it's just incredible. So, yeah, we'd love to meet him. I'd love to meet him one day and just hear his story. I mean, he's got an amazing. I mean, imagine being a young kid with your brother, and then you got your parents to try to get you through this really expensive sport
through Europe.
The sacrifices they must have had, and we know the little stories of. What they ate, cans of tuna and all sorts of stuff. They just had no access to money.
So, you know, I didn't know this until like a month or two ago, but you know how you've seen... Have you ever seen him with the donuts?
Yes.
They used to steal donuts from the bakery when they had no money, and that's why they've always got the donuts now because obviously...
I love the homage.
The homage.
I love the homage.
And they're really good at marketing themselves. They've been so smart with all their jets and stuff. And now they're huge. Like, they're one of the first people... Like them and Hayden Deegan, really, like the first athletes in motocross to really market themselves, and they've got a huge, huge cult following. You know, they've got Ferraris and Rolls Royces and worth a mint.
Good on them. Well, at least it's a good thing is they're dominating their industry. Majority of Australia doesn't know who they are yet, but they're absolutely rich. So that's the main thing, isn't it?
You know, there's another thing I was... Oh, yeah, they are. You know, another thing I was watching on the weekends, it was on YouTube. Yes. Live. Was remember the X Games?
Yes.
It's fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So X Games used to be huge.
What was the gold medal? The X Game gold medal was like a massive thing if you got one.
Pastrana's got like 20.
X Games gold medalists. Yeah.
And then like it was huge. There used to be the days where Pastrana was massive. Ken Block and Colin McRae used to do the rally. They had Jeremy McGrath and all these guys doing different like supermoto and... the freestyle motocross.
Is that rally cars?
Tony
Hawk. Yeah,
for skating. Really cool. It was huge.
It's still a thing.
So this is the thing, right?
The thing is.
But they have it in like arenas. They used to have it in these massive arenas. And now it's in like an outdoor setting. And I shit you not, there's like 1,000 people there.
Wow.
For the freestyle motocross, I was watching the final. And there was, I think, 6 or 8 competitors and 6... I think there was 8 competitors. 6 of them were Aussie. There was 1 American or like 1 or 2 Americans and like a Japanese guy. That's Jeez. It. It was just dominated by Aussies.
Wow.
But just no one's getting behind freestyle motocross. Like it's just come and gone.
It has. Yeah. I mean, I used to go to the Royal Melbourne show and see them, you know, jump from one truck to another truck and be like mesmerized. I don't know. I think things are just so... Everyone just watches shit on TV and YouTube now. Like it doesn't... Nothing... surprises people like
but like have they has
oversaturated
motocross went through this phase where and freestyle motocross of just say like Travis Pastrana and Brian Deegan and all those guys, Krusty Demons and Nitro Circus, you'd remember all those guys. They're constantly innovating, and I could be wrong, but like Kerry Hart was the first person to do the backflip, and Travis Pastrana did the double backflip in 2006, huge, and they were doing all these other tricks. But it's like, how much more can you kind of do where you're like, I don't know how you can reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. So, yeah. We grew up a generation where, you know, he's the first person to a double backflip. Now, like, you know, your local rider at the Bundura bloody soccer club could do it. You know what I'm saying?
That's such a crazy thing to say.
Give me a long enough ramp, Jimmy. I could do it. If I go, oh, come watch this guy do a double backflip, wouldn't be impressed. I'd be like, oh, whatever. You know, I've seen it on YouTube 1,000 times, you know.
Well, like, that's the thing. Obviously, not a lot of people are being impressed because they're not selling out stadiums like how they used to. So, and maybe there's a lack of personality in the sport. I don't know, man. Could be so
the one outlier to all this whole conversation, and I don't know how we got to this, but for me, like, you think WWE would be gone, finished. Like, because, like... There's so much on so much on social media now, like it's all fake, whatever. It's like the biggest sport ever. Like, it's huge at the moment.
You know, yeah, you're actually onto something. You need a big promo. You need a big backing behind it. You need a big corporation and backing. Like, and Nitro Circus, they still do like their world tour stuff, but and it was huge for a bit. I don't know what it's like now, but like their show was big. And Pastrana was the face of it. But obviously, you know, he's just getting older and he can't do everything.
It might change when you have young kids and they want to go and see that stuff now, I suppose. But obviously, you're right. They're getting 1,000 people to a show that used to get a sellout, you know?
Bro, used to be fill out these massive arenas, Rod Laver and all that, or like in LA.
We used to watch it on, I remember watching it on TV. It was like a televised.
Yeah,
live.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. It's just a weird one.
Yeah.
Listeners out there, sorry for gas bagging about it. But people understand that. A lot of people understand.
They will. 100%. I mean, I think we've all gone through that as you know, motorsport fans and stuff. We've all gone through loving seeing, you know, the Krusty Demons and all those things over the years. X Games, man. That was such a big thing.
Just
you're right.
Huge.
Yeah.
All right, Saxon Ring, bro.
Yes.
Do we even bother talking about it? Because we already know what's going to happen.
Well, James, if Marquez doesn't win...
What are you doing?
I'll be nude on the next podcast.
Oh, my God. Shake on it. I just want to see you naked. Seen it before.
I will be nude on the next podcast. He will win by a mile. He's not going to crash. He can't crash. He won't crash. So, yeah.
You want to hear something nerve-wracking for you right now?
Go.
So, he comes out over the week or after Aston. He goes, I've won Aston and I've won Mugello. They're some of my two bogey tracks. And I was being conservative. I was happy to take second. I was happy to take third. I was happy to take fourth.
Wins.
But he wins. But he says, in Sachsenring, I'm going to attack.
Oh, no.
That's exactly what he said. He's going to be on the front foot and attack. So he's crashing,
bro. He's not the Marquez of three races in. He's the Marquez of halfway through the season, knows the bike. He'll be fine. He'll be Onslon favourite to win the race. He'll be paying $1.10 to win the race.
He'll be paying $1.10 to go, Juan.
Yeah, I won't go that far about qualifying because who knows with bloody Quartararo, but definitely in the race. It's going to be like Lorenzo back in the good old days where he just got out in front and just lap after lap after lap after lap just puts fast laps in.
I think he won there 9 or 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
He got second last year. Didn't win last year. But that was on an old bike.
Yeah, I think Bagnaia won last year, which, yeah, you didn't think that circuit suits him, but yeah, maybe it might.
What about like an Alex? Alex Marquez has got that injury, doesn't he?
That's another reason why he's going to absolutely dominate. I don't think the track is the track really doesn't isn't a good track for an Aprilia. I don't think it's going to suit that. It might suit like a Zarco, might be up there, I think. But for me, like, he's got no competition at all.
Hopefully, it suits something like a Yamaha, like a Quartararo.
Hopefully, that's probably the only outlier.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's one of the most unique tracks on the calendar.
It's such a weird track.
It's tiny, like it's on a very small landmass. So.
I remember, I think Casey Stoner used to say he didn't like it because he just couldn't open it up.
Yeah.
You touch top gear.
Yes.
Right at the end of the straight.
And that first corner, it's got to be this annoying off camber, downhill, worst first corner on the calendar. It is a terrible first corner.
You know,
downhill, off camber.
Terrible. You couldn't get any worse.
No.
But there's always crashes there.
Oh, it's paying $1.01 that Jack Miller crashes turn one.
Wow.
Not on the first lap, but it's just a him crash corner, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you just see him losing the front end.
So many people lose the front end real early into that corner.
Yes.
You see
them go down. Like they pull the front brake and the bike just goes.
And you've got a cold right side of
correct,
the tire.
Because you've got left.
Yeah, there's one right in between.
The waterfall. Yeah.
10 left, which is a crazy corner. That right-hander going down the waterfall is nuts.
Imagine that with like no runoff back in the good old days.
Bro, turn one, I'm thinking about turn one right now and like that turn two, three. I swear there's not that much runoff.
Nah, not in turn one. I think they hit the catch fencing pretty often.
Pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's a weird one, actually.
Mm.
And Mark has come out also and said he thanks Ducati for controlling his instincts. And that's why he's starting to get these runner results. They're kind of just in his ear telling him, you know, just like take, you know, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know word for word, but I'm assuming it's like, it's okay to take second. It's okay to take third and controlling maybe where his thought process is. And then bang, he still goes out. He's calm, comfortable and wins.
Dude, I reckon, and we'll chat about this more next week, but I don't see Bagnaia sticking around for long if this is just going to keep happening in the next few couple of years.
Yeah, okay, but...
Like, what happens if he gets a massive offer from, like, Aprilia, for instance? You're going to be the lead rider of the team. It's an Italian manufacturer. You know, he's going to jump at that. If he's just going to be play second fielder to Marquez, his ego's not going to allow that.
No one's ego will.
So, for him to be a double world champion, to lose it to Martin, and then to get absolutely, blown out of the park by Marquez... He's got to go to himself, well, I got to go to a different manufacturer because if I stay on Ducati, I'm going to lose.
But you're on the best bike. Like, this is your best option to win.
Yeah, I know, but...
He's on that Ducati.
He's going to have to start looking at different options now.
That's a crazy thing to say.
And well, for me, it's like, why flog the dead horse? Why do you just keep finishing second all the time?
But are you going to finish second on a Ducati or then finish fourth on an Aprilia?
But he's got a chance of being on a different bike to maybe they nail these new regs and then he finishes first.
What if Ducati nails these?
But he's still going to be second.
I think he's going to be second no matter what. This is the problem.
Yeah. But at least, you know, you got to kind of die wondering, you know?
It's probably more of a curse mentally just to be his teammate.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would be so hard because it's like, okay, if Marco Bezzecchi on the Aprilia is your teammate, it's like...
I could handle it, I reckon.
He's coming good. But, like, you'd feel like you probably might have the edge on him. But Mark, I just think, plays the mind games really well. He's always Mr. Nice Guy, but then just goes out and then just, you know, lets the results speak for themselves.
Mm, 100%.
You know? Martin's back on the Aprilia.
I know. And looked like he... It was a pretty good test. He got a few laps in, so that's exciting.
Everyone's commentating on how he's running the 89 and not the number one on his test.
Fair enough. I think he doesn't deserve the number one, does he?
But he has to run the number one for the rest of the year.
Oh, that's fine. He'll be back Czech Republic 2 weeks' time, I reckon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So new
track.
Ring.
New track. Probably good to come back in a new track because everyone will be fresh. You know, he's going to have that. He's going to be so far behind on that bike, development-wise, and also compared to everyone else with that, you know...
I'm going to say he's going to finish outside the points. Maybe like a 15th.
Nah, he'll sneak a point. He'll finish 15th. Oh, actually, no. Because Chantra's out, isn't he? Nah, he won't. Yeah, you're right. Elias Espargaro will Elias Espargaro will probably like knock everyone off so he comes in.
Yeah, true. 100% he would.
And then go La Familia and then get him over to Honda.
Maybe that's why Chantra is out. Because
conspiracy.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Conspiracy.
They already don't want him. Like, Lucio Ceccanello gives him dirties every
night. Okay, James.
Rage quit.
Aleix Espargaró better be racing this weekend at Sachsenring. If they're not going to run that Mitsubishi bike, I'm going to be pissed off. Surely.
Well, they'll have to.
Well, no, they don't. They don't.
They don't have Marini either.
Oh, so who's gonna?
It has to be Espargaró, and they got Nakagami. But I wonder if they can put two test riders in.
Oh yeah, Nakagami race on that bike. Of course he will.
Nakagami's doing better than Aleix.
I'm not even gonna have this conversation.
Nah, go on, talk.
Well, no, if Nakagami finishes like in the top 12 or something, like conversation over,
bro. It's already conversation.
Yeah,
over.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's not even worth talking about.
I think Nakagami was it Mugello finished. Like 12 seconds ahead of Chantra.
Mm.
Chantra's cooked, man.
Mm.
He's
not even cooked. They haven't even started cooking him. Like can't even put him in the oven.
Nah.
He's undercooked. He's uncookable.
We're actually the first people to break this. We were breaking this in round one.
Yeah, they're too scared to talk about it.
But like it's only now everyone's starting to rear their head about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just, you could see it from a mile away, man. When a Moto2 rider is finishing, you know, maybe in the top 10s, maybe, and then getting promoted to a Honda.
Yeah.
Like, it was never going to work.
No, we should have seen the writing on the wall.
Well, we did.
Well, no, we did, yeah. Yeah. Everyone else should have.
Yeah.
So.
They're just too scared.
All right, world famous hot takes, Jimmy boy.
Last thing before you get to it. Maverick Vinales had an offer for Factory Ducati back in 2019-2020. And he turned it down because Yamaha promised him the world. And he says it's his greatest regret it's his biggest regret in his Grand Prix.
So 2020, he was on the Yamaha.
And 2019.
And then 2021, he revved the shit out of it, got axed.
Yeah. So 2019 and 2020, he would have been on the Ducati.
Well, he still could be on the Ducati.
Yeah. I think he came out and said he would have won a couple titles as well.
That's very Vinales-like. I would have won a couple of titles when the bike wasn't even that good in 2020 or 2021.
It would have been Dobby's teammate.
Yeah.
That would have been a good team. Should have done it. But how do you know? But that, yeah,
hindsight's a wonderful thing. Injuries, anything can happen. I mean, you can't. There's no guarantee in life, is there?
Yeah, you got stitched up hard. And then 2021.
It's like choosing Richard Tambling over Lance Franklin. You know, that's just exactly right. Shit happens. You know,
shit happens.
But then he could have had a knee injury in the first thing and never played again. You don't know.
And that's a comment for a percent of our listeners right there.
Our people get it.
Well, 2021, Yamaha won the world title. Cordero won.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a hard one. Mm. World famous hot takes, you big dog. Where are we?
Get after it.
Get after it. Everyone, thank you for sending them all in again. It's one of our favorite things that we do. And we love hearing everyone's thoughts. It's always a fun laugh. At Poogie_89, have Red Bull got the HRC Marquez problem?
Yes. Yes, they do.
We've spoken about this.
Yes. Yes, they definitely do. It's
could be worse. Could be worse.
Could be worse.
As in, yeah, it could be worse than HRC right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an argument, but yeah, I can't say yes or no to that. But you're right. Sonoda's done absolutely nothing in that car. Absolutely nothing. Not even a chance of being in the top 10. So yeah, he's really, really struggling. I'm gonna say Lawson might have even been doing a touch better than Sonoda.
Yeah,
and then Lawson comes out and finishes seventh last round. Yeah. So yeah, it's crazy. I definitely agree with that. They have to go after a big, big name if he's going to be going to Mercedes. They joked about it. They said they're going to go after Piastri if that's the case. But we'll see. Time will tell.
You're not going to want to jump in that Red Bull. Like, that's just not a car you want to be in now.
No, it's like the same. It is exactly the same as Repsol Honda because no one wants. It's a career destroyer.
Yeah. We broke that news as well. We're the first people to compare that. Jeez, we're good.
Well, that's why we run a very successful podcast.
That's it. Our boy, D Silva 87S.
Queen of the South.
Queen. Jewel?
No, he's a queen this week.
Wonder what type of queen. Danny Pedrosa over Pecco Bagnaia. Second against aliens, more impressive than two Ducati titles. New riders are washed.
Wow. Oh, there you go.
That's a hot take.
It is.
Pedrosa was amazing. I think he had 31 career wins.
Unfortunately, had two collarbones that were hanging on by a thread from birth. So he's never had a chance, did he?
He got a broken collarbone from Marco Simoncelli, who punted him. And then Marc Marquez... This is Danny Pedrosa luck. This is James Shaw luck. Marc Marquez in Aragon went up the arse of Danny Pedrosa. Yes. Hit the sensor for the traction controller. Yeah. So he wrapped it on, launched himself into the space station, kissed an astronaut, came back down and broke his collarbone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
But a hot take. Oh, it's a hard one. Two different eras. I don't know. Pedrosa was good. But Pecco Bagnaia's got two world titles. Yeah, yeah. Can't compete with that.
We're soon to forget how good Bagnaia was in 2022.
Amazing. Amazing. Still an amazing rider, but...
Yeah, Bagnaia came from 94 points down in 22 to win the title. Like, we forget about this. You know?
He's a Lorenzo effect.
He had that dominant... But that's when that's when it all changed for Ducati. Halfway through 22, they just nailed it. Yeah. So...
He's a Lorenzo effect, I'm telling you.
Mm.
At Sean Cody, Pecco is the most overrated rider on the grid. Has to be perfect on a bike for him to compete.
Again, we're quick to talk about this.
Rough.
He's been made look worse than what he is at the moment.
And you're going up against the GOAT. It's such a hard comparison. At Sam Cell,
but
21.
He also lost to Jorge Martin.
Yeah, he did.
You know, who's a young, more inexperienced rider on a non-factory team.
It was his fourth year.
So,
Martin.
You know, that actually goes back to what he was just saying. So
I like it. Sam Sell 21. F1 can race in the wet, but the directors are too scared to let them put the wets on and race.
Look, for me...
I like that.
I don't know why it started under the safety car. I was getting super frustrated. Notes were going flying out, but... Then they started the race as normal, which was good. I don't know why they would need to do that because it was sun shining and there was a bit of rain, but that was about it. They're very conservative now with that, and it's sort of becoming a little bit of a joke with putting the safety car out, because unless cars are flying off aquaplaning, they should be racing. But they're doing it before that happens rather than waiting for it to happen. I mean, that famous Nürburgring 2007, 8 or 9 cars went flying down the front pit straight. Famously, Hamilton left his car running, everyone else turned theirs off, and he got back on and finished the race. But for me,
You're right. It's hard as at home. It's hard to go, my God, come on, just let them race. Well, yellow flag, yellow flag, yellow flag, safety car. I mean, it's just super hard. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the safety of the drivers, isn't it? So,
Yeah. But I get where he's coming from.
100%.
Our boy at Nikki D, 3604. If Pecco had another Bagnaia is very popular. If Pecco had a GP24, would he be ahead of Alex in the championship?
No.
I think it'd be closer.
No. I don't think the bike that makes a big of a difference.
Clearly.
It's a 24.5 anyway. It's not a 25. They're still running the chassis and the engine from 24. A couple of electronic differences, but no, it's not that big of a difference. Everyone's got quicker, James. That's the other thing.
I think they got chassis upgrades.
Very marginal. Very minimal, I'm saying. Very minimal. It's not a complete new bike. It's not.
It's not. No, it's not a complete new bike. No. Next, at Brisky.
If that could happen, he'd be on the 24. He'd be already riding it.
Well, they can't. They're never putting him back on a 24. Mm. It was a 24.9, they call it, or whatever it is. There's something where they can't mesh the two together. It's a new bike, but it's not. At Brisky, could we see the Brothers of Destruction together if... Again, Pecco. Could we see the Brothers of Destruction together
you
if...
You choose these.
I know. Again, could we see the Brothers of Destruction together if Pecco doesn't start beating Alex?
Well, there's going to be that. I mean, if Pecco wants to leave or gets an offer from somewhere, it's going to be the perfect fit, isn't it? So...
He's still going to back up. He's going to back it up through the rest of the year, Alex Marquez, but he's clear number two at the moment.
I think his surgery went well from all reports. Back on the bike. And
I think he's going to be quick, man.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be quick. These guys are tough. He's had a couple of weeks off. They'll fucking jab him up and send him out.
Mm.
McDormand, but he raced with one leg.
Yeah. Sewn together.
They'll figure it out. At @Z_AndrewArthur, Martin will follow a similar path as Juan Mir. Win a championship, then just be known as the Crash King. Interesting take. Very interesting take. Martin's going to be known, I think, if he doesn't get his shit together with Aprilia or someone and has zero success, he's going to be known as a guy that sabotaged his own career.
But he'll always be known as a world champion.
Correct.
Can't take that away from him.
For sure, 100%.
Mm. But where Danny Pedrosa
will
always be known as he should have won a world championship.
But I think fans will have more fond memories over Danny Pedrosa and maybe more respect to a degree. Mm. Like Martin, could he's in the fork in the road of his career. He could either go either way. But like... realistically, if I was Jorge Martin, I'd be staying with this Aprilia. Mm. Everyone knows it's got something there.
Well, Bez finishing second and fifth the last two races, yeah. So it's there.
It's there.
Especially up against his dominant Ducati.
But like, is it now too far gone where it's like a pride's in the way of just saying, I'm going to stay the Aprilia
Euros,
now.
Euros, man. Euros.
It's the manager, bro. It's the manager wants more fucking...
Yeah, it is. It
more
is.
More money.
Yes. 10% of the contract.
Yep. At Jack.Watson, if Verstappen left for Mercedes, Red Bull would pull the plug on their F1 team.
Turn it up.
Such a crazy response.
Well, that's what hot takes are for.
That's why we love it. You got to send them in.
I think Red Bull have just launched a cycling team now. So they're in the Tour de France with a cycling team.
Really?
There's no letting down of their sponsorship.
And remember, Red Bull came in, in the mid-2000s of David Coulthard? Was he racing for him?
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly right. That was Coulthard and...
That was a mid-pack car.
Christian Klien.
Jesus, man.
Was back then? Yeah. They took over the Jaguar team.
Yeah. There you go. All right, this is your boy, @Adzi_TheDoc. Shout out to one of the Aussie Superbike teams, the Motor School Boys, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yes.
Aaron Kennett to factory BMW, World Superbikes 2026 rumors.
Oh, okay. That's news to me.
Yeah.
That's news to me.
Yeah, I know Kennett's said a couple of things in the press saying, if no one wants to be in MotoGP, I'm going to be looking for World Superbikes so I can win races.
Oh, that's such a tough one, James. So you'd rather be in the World Superbike paddock than the Moto2 paddock?
I'd rather be competing for a Moto2 world title.
Mm.
World Superbikes is in a very floaty state.
Fragile state. Yeah. Yeah, the European Cup, we call it. Yeah. With the token Australian round.
Yeah, when they should be going to Sepang.
Mm. I think you're... I just think you have to be in that paddock. I mean, you finally...
you're winning races in Moto 2, you know, you should be winning more races. You should be leading the championship, realistically.
He's close.
And he's got the look.
He's got that. Well, I don't think he does. That's the problem. I don't think sponsors want to jump on board.
Yeah, we've been saying that. Yeah. Because he has the look for the cool kids, but maybe not the majority.
Oh, but if, you know, Lewis...
He is covered in tats,
but if Lewis Hamilton can get away with neck tattoos, surely.
Yeah.
It's the same shit.
What's the big deal about neck tattoos anyway? Who cares?
Who cares?
Just don't do a teardrop. That's my limit. No teardrops.
Yeah, I wouldn't run a teardrop.
No.
We're famously both clean skins. I think we're the only two people in Melbourne that don't have tattoos.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not a huge fan of commitment.
You know, every tattoo that I've ever thought of getting, I like hate now. I never got. I wanted to get a Southern Cross on my shoulder when I was like 16. What a terrible thing to do.
Disgusting.
For our Americans,
I get a tattoo of Curtis somewhere.
You should.
Yeah.
For our Americans, the Southern Cross is like your version of the Confederate flag. Yeah. Such a bogan. Which is a hillbilly. Yeah. At Patrick_Skrikswagen. Somkiat fakes injury, Honda Mafia breaking his leg.
Yeah, well. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. Jeez, who knows?
Alicia Spargo's got that bat, I reckon.
Well, yeah, if Takanga Kagami comes back to the Idemitsu, it's probably Idemitsu CEOs going, no, he out, break leg. Get Nakagami back in. Get him back in.
Key with doing the Asian accent is every couple words out.
Yeah.
I witnessed you were in, when we were in Thailand, we were back in Melbourne, and you still had your Asian accent on.
It's like the Italians, you just take off the last syllable. So instead of salami, it's salam. Salum. Instead of mortadella, it's mortadal.
So ridiculous. I've spoken to Italians about that. They're like, no.
Go on.
Our boy Willie Nelson, number one
one-liner.
Number one one-liner.
Yeah, that's country. That's country, Vic. Yeah, but that's you grow up with it.
Yeah, if you don't have one-liners, mate, you're not marrying me daughter type of
thing. No, that's it.
Perez was due to test for Cadillac, but was turned around at the border. # MAGA.
Got him.
Yes, got him. Artisanal.bogan. Jet Lawrence will retire as Australia's greatest athlete since Don Bradman, GOAT to be.
Wow, it's such a good call. Yeah, love that.
Great call. We love hearing that. At Matt Stevens, will Ducati find success in motocross? Justin Barsha is rumoured to be signing for them. Well, Ducati rode
this one.
Ducati rode in Red Bird with Antonio Caroli, who's famously a 9-time world champion in MXGP.
Yep.
39 years old. Who was running fourth for a bit in Moto 1, Moto 2. Finished ninth. 39 years old.
It's pretty good.
In another country on a, almost like a, not a stock bike, but a very new bike.
Yeah.
And then...
Where have they stolen parts from, though? It can't be just ground up that made the created the bike. Like, it has to... Like, they have obviously forks. They don't run their own forks. What forks they're running?
Don't know. It'd be like... I don't know.
But the engine, I mean, like, having that engine gear ratio right, I mean... That's one thing I noticed with Jet, man. Like, he just comes out of the corner. He must have... As he's coming around the corner, he must just fucking bang it on. Because he just flies out of the corners.
He's so smooth. That's, smoother than anyone.
That's the difference, the exit speed from corners from everyone else. That's his difference, in my opinion.
I think he's just... Yeah, like, he's smooth and just so much more flowy than anyone else.
Oh, it's just unbelievable.
Hey, Curdy.
Sorry,
are you able just to look up what suspension the new Ducati motocross bike runs? I'm actually interested in that now. No, it's the motocross 450, whatever it is. I don't even know what it's called. But with Ducati, like, they are going to be coming into, like, I don't know if they, I don't know enough about it, but I know they won the Italian motocross championship with Cairoli, and then amazing efforts with him in Red Bird. And I think Moto 2, he was up there or top 10 or around about that, and then retired for like heat exhaustion.
Jesus.
Yeah, but 39 years old, how fast he is on a brand new motocross bike. Ducati are going to be fucking making moves.
It's going to be
Showa suspension.
Inverted front forks as well.
Yeah. And fully adjustable rear. Yeah, cool. Awesome. Thanks, Curdy. Very interesting. So they're having a crack, man. And for Corolla to be running around and finish ninth in a moto on a brand new bike, obviously he's an amazing talent, but he's also 39 years old.
Yeah, it's a great effort, 100%.
And that
could be our performance of the week.
Yeah, that bike, as I'm telling you, it's going to be going to be something weird. You know, you got Triumph in there now. You got Ducati's coming in. You got this jump. Euros, bro. They're taking over.
I don't actually get why. I don't get why. Like, it's just, it's a lot of money to invest. I suppose it's the only way to sell their bikes. And like, aren't people going to buy the bike anyway? Well, like, is that just silly to say?
Well, nah, not in dirt.
Yeah.
Paolo Cibatti runs the team.
Yeah.
So he was over in Red Bud. Imagine him, Red Bud. Cibatti.
Does he have a Red Bud lass as well?
Oh, he would. He would have found the local Asian lady from the one massage shop in Red Bud. We got to go, bro. We need to go to Red Bud.
Not on my list of things, priority, but one day we'll go.
Well, mate.
We can do anything we want.
We'll do anything we want. Of course we're going to go.
I want to go to Bathurst first.
I want to paint you. I want you double parked in Bud Lights and painted red, white and blue, shirt off in Red Bird.
Oh, it's July, the 4th of July.
It's their biggest one. It's 4th of July. Letting off fireworks, doing crazy shit. B_Rothberg. If you had to choose between being teammates of Marc Marquez or Max Verstappen, who and why? Take money and everything out of it. So, I
think I'd probably still choose Marc Marquez because you could still have a general conversation. I don't think Verstappen would have anything to do with you.
Yeah, I would choose Marc Marquez as well because I think he would probably be a better. Nicer guy,
yeah.
Probably less autistic.
But does Marc Marquez have a private jet like Verstappen has? Because that might come in handy.
I reckon he does. Oh, I don't know, actually. I don't think he owns his private jet. I think he flies private, though. Mm. Verstappen owns his own private jet, yeah?
Yeah, he's got like
a big orange
one. It's amazing. Yeah, it's incredible.
Sim and shit on there. Yeah, I'm going to go Marc Marquez. At Matt Stevens, you are either a DTS F1 fan or an autism spectrum F1 fan. There's not much in between.
Yeah, wow. That could be the hot take of the year.
I knew you'd like that.
Can you say that one?
Yeah, I knew you'd like that.
That could be
one.
A contender for hot take of the year. It's so true. There's no medium ground, is there?
Nah.
There's some that were the autistic and then they've gone to the DTS side.
Which I think's like a big market.
Yes.
Because they hyper-fixate on it.
Yeah.
Like Roman Grosjean's crash in whatever series that was like, that was like the catalyst. Like that took over their blank eyes. And then you look at like the McLaren fans, bro. They're all licking windows.
That was fucked.
Actually, I want to find the footage of that again. Well, I want to find out.
So it was like this.
Was it? Bro, I'm telling you, it was
like AI, I reckon.
I messaged you straight away.
I said, what's going on? If anyone doesn't know, the... end of last year, the Abu Dhabi race, they had like crossed live to the fans at the McLaren headquarters, and like I don't know where they found these people from. It's fucking ridiculous,
bro. They found them from like I'm telling you, like the local fucking autistic hospital. I'm telling you,
I don't know.
It was strange, but we're bringing autism to life. We're all autistic ourselves. That's why it's funny.
Well, it's true. Yeah,
but there's different spectrums, and like you see, you go to some of these F1 events, and they got proper sensory rooms for fucking. Proper sensory.
Well, someone brought
people.
Up sensory rooms the other day, which is quite funny because, like, that's an OG listener right there. They're talking about the sensory room.
Yeah, yeah.
We call it the Curtis Shack. It's called.
On top of the shack, it's got two fairy ears.
Yeah, it does.
That's it, T-Shavs.
All right. Well, sorry about the blabbering on the last probably 15 minutes, but we had a bit of fun. Bit of chin wag.
Nah, it's a bit of a chin wag.
Yeah,
we like that.
On to Sachsenring this weekend, and then a double header, Czech and. I don't know where F1 is, but we'll find out in a couple of weeks.
So. That's all happening. Yeah. We'll see you in the ring, mate. I'll see you nude next week.
No, definitely not. We'll still Marquez van. Thanks.
See ya.